Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with revelations of three hidden cameras found in El Cajon fire stations run by Heartland Fire and Rescue, including in the changing and sleeping areas for female first responders. Then on Crime Beat, hear about a whopping $65,000 reward now being offered for information leading to the arrest and conviction in a cold case murder of a young Navy man at his La Mesa home. A child who wandered onto a freeway in Santee is safe thanks to the quick thinking of an off-duty dispatcher and the swift action of sheriff's deputies. On Green Scene, we'll have a report on three bills that have passed the House of Representatives that aim to take away EPA waivers that allow California to have the strictest vehicle emission limits in the nation. Congressman Daryl Issa voted for those bills, or what Governor Gavin Newsom calls making California smoggy again. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including President Donald Trump's executive order to cut off all funding for PBS and NPR, our national public broadcasting organizations, as well as troubling details on immigrants deported to an El Salvador prison with no criminal record. The Felipe fire scorched 50 acres near Julian, and an appeals court has ruled against the Chaldean Coalition in a lawsuit over redistricting of supervisorial districts here in East County. On sports, Cuyamaca College's Coyotes men's soccer team has won their first ever state championship. Then on Tribal Beat, hear about an upcoming talk in Alpine on tribal cultural preservation by Carmen Lucas, a Cuaymay Laguna elder and tribal monitor. Spring means rattlesnakes are emerging, and we'll have some safety tips for you today on our show. On the second half of our show, from 2025 Talks, hear about growing tensions between Canada and the United States. A weekend interview in which President Trump refused to agree to follow the Constitution and the due process that it requires, his aim to reopen the Alcatraz prison off California's coast, and more. Then, our bookshelf host Annette Tour will be interviewing Dr. Keith Black on his new book, Brain Surgeon. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll have some fun and festive events coming up the rest of this month, from food and beer festivals to Mother's Day events and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The City of El Cajon held an emergency closed-door meeting May 5th over an anticipated lawsuit against the city regarding three hidden cameras found in two fire stations, including two cameras in the private dressing and sleeping areas for women first responders. A complaint filed against the City of El Cajon and American Medical Response, or AMR, on behalf of four female first responders on March 20th by Attorney Dan Gillian claims that one or more of the city employees used concealed cameras to secretly videotape, film, photograph, and record by electronic means the complainants and other victims in states of full and partial undress while inside their bunk rooms. Gillian has said that a male employee has left his employment over the incident and plans to also join the complaint, according to NBC San Diego. No suspect has yet been identified. The complaint also claims that the city was negligent in failing to conduct a prompt, thorough, and neutral investigation. The complaint sought special and general damages in excess of $10,000 for each of the women for psychological treatment, emotional distress, humiliation, anxiety, and mental anguish, as well as punitive damages against the unknown public employees. On April 16th, however, the city sent a letter signed by Deputy City Manager Marisol Thorne to Gillian denying the claim filed on behalf of the four women. No reason for the denial was stated. The denial sets a clock ticking. Claimants have 6 months from the date of the letter to file a court action. The first camera, disguised as a cell phone charger, was found at Fire Station 8 on East Madison Avenue by a co-worker of Isabella Mason. A first responder who says trust among her colleagues has been broken, 10 News reports. And that camera is motion-activated, she says, which means every single time I was coming in there, like in a vulnerable space, somebody was watching me. A second camera was found soon after, hidden in an alarm clock in a different bunk room in the same station. On May 2nd, NBC reports a third camera was found. The city has refused to disclose its whereabouts, but sources told NBC that it was at Station 9 on North Marshall Avenue in El Cajon in a co-ed day room. East County Magazine contacted Heartland Fire's public information officer before revelation of the third camera surfaced. We asked whether Heartland had conducted inspections of other stations in El Cajon or in stations Heartland operates in La Mesa or Lemon Grove. He declined to answer and referred our inquiries to El Cajon, even though El Cajon has no jurisdiction over Heartland stations in the other two cities. El Cajon refused to reply when asked if inspections had been conducted of any other stations, and if so, whether any hidden cameras were found. In response to an extensive records request, the city provided only two to us, the letter from Gillian, and the city's response denying that claim. We have reached out to elected officials and the city manager in La Mesa, who have not responded as of our show taping deadline. Lemon Grove Councilmember Jessica Heredia, in response to our inquiry to her, says she has requested inspection of all changing and resting areas in the Lemon Grove Heartland station, contacting both city manager Lydia Romero and Heartland Fire Chief Bent Koch. The city manager responded, "Already being done," Heredia told East County Magazine. Heartland Fire and Rescue stations house both firefighters and emergency medical personnel working for American Medical Response. Despite finding the first cameras on February 2nd, Isabel Mason, the first responder at Station 8, has said that employees were not notified by AMR of the incident until this week. AMR has said the discovery of hidden cameras is deeply disturbing, adding that it has offered support to the victims from its mental health provider and is committed to working with law enforcement and the city to assist in a criminal investigation, but noted that AMR does not manage the facility, 10 News reports. The complaint filed against the city of El Cajon contends that the women's civil rights were violated, including workplace gender discrimination, sexual harassment, and invasion of privacy in the workplace. The city declined to answer numerous questions posed by multiple media outlets, including ours, including whether or not the city has any information on who may have seen any photos or videos taken by the hidden cameras, and whether any images may have been posted online. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. The La Mesa Police Department and the Naval Criminal Investigative Services, or NCIS, are asking for the public's help to identify and find suspects responsible for the murder of 22-year-old Navy sailor Cornelius Dante Brown 4 years ago. Rewards for information leading to the arrest and conviction of these suspects now totals $65,000. Governor Gavin Newsom recently pledged an additional $50,000 reward from the state of California, in addition to $9,000 from Brown's family, a $5,000 reward from NCIS, and $1,000 offered by San Diego Crime Stoppers. On April 24, 2021, around 12:26 a.m., the La Mesa Police Department received several 911 calls reporting gunshots. Officers arrived within minutes and found Brown inside his apartment on Echo Court, suffering from gunshot wounds. According to witnesses inside the apartment, including shipmates of Brown, he was shot while answering an unexpected knock on the front door. He opened the door to see two men wearing ski masks and black hooded sweatshirts. One of the men fired multiple shots at Brown. The suspects fled south on Echo Court. The victim was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital, where he died of his injuries. Anyone with information about the murder of Cornelius Dante Brown is urged to call La Mesa Police Detective Royce Culp at 619-667-7533 or to provide a tip via www.sdcrimestoppers.org.
On March 9th, just before 4:30 p.m., the Sheriff's Communications Center received a report about an 11-year-old autistic boy who had gone missing from a supermarket on Mission Gorge Road. The child, who is nonverbal, was with his family when he ran out of the store. His family called the sheriff's office when they could not find him. Within minutes, deputies from Santee Sheriff's Station began to look for the missing child. A sheriff's ASTREA helicopter also began making announcements to the public in the area about the child. Around 5:15 p.m., off-duty sheriff's dispatcher, Shiloh Corbett, was driving home from work when she spotted a boy matching the missing child's description running along Mass Boulevard near the State Route 52 on-ramp. She promptly called the Sheriff's Communications Center to report the sighting. While on the phone, Corbett noticed the child running up the on-ramp. She immediately stopped her car and got out and followed the child. By the time she got to the freeway shoulder, the child had crossed the westbound lanes of State Route 52 and was standing in the center divider. Knowing the child's name from the information given to her by Sheriff Communications Center, Corbett called to him to stay where he was for his own safety. The entire time, she was relaying information on the phone to an off-duty sheriff's dispatcher supervisor, who was directing deputies to the scene. Once deputies arrived, they parked on the street below the SR 52 overpass. They could see the child at the top of the steep concrete embankment. Deputies called out to the boy, but he moved away from them and towards the center divider guardrail. Deputies ran up to the embankment to try and stop him, but the child hopped over the guardrail and started running along the busy freeway. Without hesitation, deputies Cody Green and Michael Moser jumped over the guardrail as well and raced to catch up with the child. They were able to get him off the freeway safely and reunite him with his family. No one was hurt, but the story could have ended far differently if not for the quick thinking and courage of Sheriff Dispatcher Shiloh Corbett, as well as Santee deputies Cody Green and Michael Moser, working with the Sheriff's Helicopter and Communications Center to bring the missing boy safely home. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
House Republicans have pushed through three bills to repeal California's Clean Air Act waivers, which have allowed our state to have stricter vehicle emission standards than the rest of the nation, resulting in dramatically cleaner air. Governor Gavin Newsom has blasted the measures as both illegal and aimed at, quote, making California smoggy again. Since the Clean Air Act was passed, under Republican President Richard Nixon's administration in 1970, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has granted California over 100 waivers for its clean air and climate efforts. The results have been dramatic, as this reporter can personally attest. Before the rollout of California's landmark air pollution standards, the strictest in the nation, I passed out on the street from breathing in very smoggy air while walking in Los Angeles and had to be revived by paramedics. I had to move away from L.A. soon after, but on return trips there in recent decades, the air has been visibly much cleaner and healthier. Since 2000, the waivers have helped California reduce harmful greenhouse gas emissions by 20%, while the state's gross domestic product, or GDP, a key economic indicator, rose 78%. Last year, California ran on 100% clean energy at least partially for two out of every 3 days. Waivers have made a big difference for San Diegans, though our air quality still has serious pollution problems. The San Diego metro region saw a major improvement in fine particle pollution, which dropped 4.6% from the 2014 to 2016 period to the 2022-2023 period, due largely to waivers granted by the EPA under the Obama administration. But San Diego's ozone pollution is among the worst in the U.S., making it one of the smoggiest areas in the country, according to a new report from the American Lung Association. San Diego's Republican Congressman Daryl Issa voted yes on all three measures which are pending in the Senate, while San Diego's four Democratic representatives all voted against them. Issa took over $14,000 in campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry during his most recent campaign, according to Open Secrets. California's effort to transition to electric vehicles has been opposed by the oil and gas industry since it would sharply reduce use of fossil fuels that pollute our air. Here are more details on the three bills passed by House Republicans. H.R. 89 would end the EPA's waiver for nitrogen oxide engine emission standards, taking aim at California's push for zero-emission trucks. H.R. 88 would nullify the Biden administration's waiver that allows California to phase out gasoline-powered vehicles and transition to electric vehicles with zero emissions. H.J.R. 87 takes aim at California's rule for heavy-duty trucks and advanced clean trucks and zero-emission airport shuttles. Energy and Commerce Chair Brett Guthrie, a Kentucky Republican, says the American people should choose what vehicle is right for them, not California bureaucrats. The Specialty Equipment Market Association supports the bills. They say that EV mandates could inflict damage to the country's economy by harming parts suppliers for internal combustion engines. But California Attorney General Rob Bonta calls House Republicans' efforts to repeal California's Clean Vehicle Program using the Congressional Review Act unlawful, noting that the act was designed to allow congressional oversight of new rules by federal agencies, not partisan attacks. Bonta notes that for 50 years, California has exercised its right under the Federal Clean Air Act to pursue solutions to the state's persistent air pollution. The Government Accounting Office, or GAO, the Congressional Watchdog Office, as well as the Senate Parliamentarian, have both ruled that the Congressional Review Act's process does not apply to these EPA waivers. Governor Newsom says, "The only thing that's changed is that big polluters and the right-wing propaganda machine have succeeded in buying off the Republican Party, and now the House is using a tactic that the Senate's own parliamentarian has said is lawless." California's governor concludes in a press release, "Our vehicles program helps clean the air for all Californians, and we will continue to defend it." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we have some national news headline stories from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more local coverage from East County Magazine.
The Public News Service, I'm Mike Clifford. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Thursday evening seeking to prohibit federal funding for NPR and PBS, the public broadcasting service. The order, which could be subject to legal challenge, called the broadcaster's news coverage biased and partisan. That from the Washington Post. They report it instructs the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to cease providing direct funds to either broadcaster. It also orders the CPB to cease indirect funding of the services through grants to local public radio and television stations. Next, a 19-year-old New Yorker is one of 237 Venezuelan immigrants sent to an El Salvador supermax prison last month.
Merwell Gutierrez lived in the Bronx with his father Wilmer when he was arrested under suspicion of being in the Tren de Aragua gang, although he has no criminal record in the U.S. or Venezuela. Since then, his father has been working to get him home. Paz Radovic, with the news outlet Documented, covers the immigrant community in and around New York City. She says the ordeal has damaged Wilmer Gutierrez's faith in the American dream.
He contacted a lot of police stations and no one was able to give anything about where Merwell was. So that silence is what Wilmer resents the most, not just the arrest itself, but the feeling of being left in the dark. And that has made him think about if coming to the U.S. was worth it or not.
Merwell Gutierrez had a pending asylum case in New York City. A 60 Minutes investigation has found 179 of the people deported to El Salvador have no criminal records. I'm Edwin J. Vier.
GOP lawmakers have recently introduced the Food Security Farm Protection Act. It's an attempt to repeal California's landmark animal welfare law known as Proposition 12, which makes minimum space requirements for breeding pigs, egg-laying hens, and veal calves, and bans the sale of meat raised in non-compliant settings. Rebecca Wolf is with the nonprofit Food and Water Watch.
This has been the big ag playbook for quite a while. Big ag doesn't want to be told what to do by states. And so it puts Republicans in a really interesting position that pits them kind of between big ag and more of a states' rights framework.
This story was produced with original reporting from Seth Milstein for Sentient. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find your trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A brush fire on May 1st scorched around 50 acres in East County. The Felipe Fire began along Highway 78, east of San Felipe Road and north of the Shelter Valley area between Julian and Borrego Springs. Working in steep, rocky terrain, firefighters aided by air attacks were able to contain the blaze within hours, according to CAL FIRE. No homes were lost, though one firefighter sustained a minor injury, City News Service reported. You can visit eastcountymagazine.org and sign up to receive our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts via email, and you can also follow East County Alert on X to stay informed about wildfires and other emergencies in San Diego's inland region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community. The 4th District Court of Appeals has ruled against the Chaldean Coalition over supervisorial redistricting. The lawsuit, Chaldean Coalition versus the County of San Diego Independent Redistricting Commission, was filed in 2021. The coalition had argued that the Chaldean community was disenfranchised by the county's supervisorial redistricting in East County. The county change put Rancho San Diego into District 4 and the city of El Cajon into District 2, splitting the vote of Chaldean Christians from the Middle East. Over 63% of Chaldeans live in the El Cajon region, including Rancho San Diego, with about 8% of them in Spring Valley, 4% in La Mesa, and 27% in other parts of the county. The suit sought to have Rancho San Diego and part of Spring Valley put back into District 2, where it's historically been. That district currently is represented by Joel Anderson. A trial court ruled against the Chaldean coalition, and now the appellate court has upheld the trial court's ruling. The coalition had challenged the trial court's ruling based on arguments of racial gerrymandering. The group contends that the redistricting prioritized shifting more African-American voters into District 4, which is currently represented by Monica Montgomery Stepp. But the appellate court rejected those arguments, finding, among other things, that the county's redistricting commission had rejected an alternative plan that would have put even more African-Americans into District 4 than the plan that was approved. We've reached out to the Chaldean Coalition to ask if it plans to appeal to the state Supreme Court, but the coalition has not responded as of our show taping deadline. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a sports report. The Cuyamaca College Coyotes have plenty to howl about after winning the men's statewide soccer championship. In late April, the team from the Rancho San Diego area in San Diego's East County traveled to Sacramento to receive its first ever award. The Coyotes earned the title after an impressive six consecutive wins during playoffs, averaging 2 goals per game while conceding only 4 goals across 6 matches. Their regular season performance was just as impressive, with the Coyotes scoring 64 goals in 25 games with an 84% shot accuracy, finishing the season with a 15-game winning streak. The Cuyamaca College team's victory marks a historic achievement, as it is the first title won by a soccer team from the San Diego Imperial County region, as well as the fourth in the region of Southern California. This is the second year that the Cuyamaca men's soccer program has earned the Pacific Coast Athletic Conference championship. In addition, Coach Brian Hyatt Alou claimed his fourth title as the conference's men's soccer coach of the year, and Enrique Kike Rodriguez was named player of the year. The championship was the first for the Pacific Athletic Conference. On April 25th, the team celebrated its championship season with a ring celebration and a proclamation from the county presented by Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp. Coach Brian Hyatt Alou, a 4-time PCAC Coach of the Year, spoke of the team's unwavering perseverance and focus leading up to the final game. Team MVP Enrique Kike Rodriguez had the honor of pulling the cord to reveal the team's new 2024 championship banner, now proudly displayed in the breezeway of the gymnasium. Present to celebrate were Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District Chancellor Lynn Saraceno Nault, Governing Board President Debbie Justison, Cuyamaca College President Jessica Robinson, Cuyamaca College Athletic Director Tony Campbell, as well as other district employees, administrators, and family members. On behalf of the County of San Diego, Supervisor Montgomery Stepp declared April 25th as Cuyamaca College Men's Soccer Team Day.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Miriam Raftery with a Tribal Beat report. Carmen Lucas is a respected Cuyamay Laguna elder, consultant, tribal monitor, educator, and lifelong advocate for Native American heritage preservation. She will be sharing her story, teachings, and vision for the future of tribal cultural preservation on Sunday, June 8th at 1 p.m. at the Alpine Women's Club during an event hosted by the Alpine Historical Society. She has spent nearly 30 years working in cultural resource management as well as serving as caretaker of her ancestral homeland, Lucas Ranch. Guided by her father, the late Tom Lucas, she has dedicated her life to protecting sacred sites, ancestral remains, and cultural landscapes throughout Southern California. Her work includes co-authoring successful nominations in the National Register of Historic Places, promoting use of non-invasive preservation technologies, and mentoring new generations of tribal monitors. This event is open to the public, but RSVPs are requested to assure enough seating. You can RSVP by calling Corinne at 619-417-1306 or emailing info@alpinehistory.org.
As the weather warms up, rattlesnake season is here. Snakes come out of their hiding places and are looking for food. Here are some steps to help keep safe at home or on local hiking trails. Make your home less hospitable to snakes. Yard debris, wood piles, gaps under homes, wooden decks, cement patios, and open water sources can attract snakes. Remove brush piles and fill gaps as much as possible. Also, watch for snakes around pools and ponds. Keep bushes and shrubs 6 inches or less off the ground. Watch your feet and hands. If you lose sight of them, such as when you reach under a rock or step into a brush pile, the potential to be bitten increases. Be on the lookout when walking on hillsides, especially if you're operating loud machinery that makes it difficult to hear the signature rattle. If you're wearing headphones, keep music low and practice additional caution. If you own a dog, consider getting a rattlesnake vaccine and keep your dog on a leash at all times when hiking. When hiking, scan the trail ahead of you and on both sides. Stick to the trails and don't wander through tall grasses or brush. Wear hiking boots and carry a walking stick, placing the stick ahead of your feet as you walk. If you do see a snake, don't antagonize it. Give it space to slither along on its own. If you hear a telltale rattle, freeze and slowly back away. But be aware that snakes don't always coil up or rattle before striking. If you are bitten by a rattlesnake, stay calm, dial 911, and seek immediate help. Lie down and keep the affected limb lower than the heart. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. We're going to hear some national news headlines right now from Public News Service's 2025 Talk, and then we'll have a fascinating interview with Dr. Keith Black, author of the new book, Brain Surgeon, followed by Destination East County with our top festivals and events coming up across our inland region and more.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
What someone wants and what is reality and what the Canadian people clearly have stated, virtually without exception, is this will never, ever happen.
In his first press conference since winning election, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney repeated they won't become the 51st American state. Carney's Liberal Party won a huge come-from-behind victory by campaigning against President Donald Trump's trade war and demands to make Canada part of the U.S. This comes after 60% of Puerto Ricans voted last year to have a ballot referendum on statehood. That could only happen through an act of Congress, which looks unlikely. Meanwhile, during an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Trump was noncommittal about who gets due process under the 5th and 14th Amendments. When asked about U.S. citizens and green card holders wrongly deported in some cases to an El Salvador supermax prison, Trump refused to say if they should have legal protections as granted in the Constitution. Courts have ruled clearly they do. Trump is ordering the Federal Bureau of Prisons to not only reopen California's Alcatraz prison, but to expand it as well. The Justice Department is suing Hawaii, Michigan, New York, and Vermont for laws addressing climate change. State climate superfund laws mean fines for the largest greenhouse gas emissions, but a new White House executive order charges the Attorney General with counteracting such moves. Kit Kennedy with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the AG's lawsuits are baseless.
They run afoul of the Constitution and multiple federal laws, which make clear states have the authority to shape their own energy and environmental pathways.
The DOJ says the state's actions violate the Constitution and are preempted by the Clean Air Act, which calls on the EPA to regulate power plant pollutants. New York's law is on track to collect up to $75 billion for polluting companies over 25 years. A new study says it's now possible to pinpoint specific companies that can be held accountable for climate change. Report co-author Justin Mankin with Dartmouth College says his team calculated a price tag for one climate hazard, extreme heat caused by carbon dioxide and methane emitted by more than 100 companies over 3 decades. He compares it to drug makers' role in opioid addiction and says they haven't been excused because they make breakthrough medicines and vaccines.
It doesn't absolve them for their role in, say, generating the opioid crisis. And courts ruled they had a role in generating the opioid crisis and needed to compensate harmed individuals for that.
Last month, the Department of Education shut the regional Head Start office for Michigan and neighboring states, putting staff on administrative leave. Advocates worry cuts to Head Start could derail a successful and growing Michigan school readiness program. Steve Barnett with the National Institute for Early Education Research says it's coming just as the state is struggling to fund preschool for more than 40,000 students.
These reports of potential further cuts come at a time when we know the pandemic funds will go away because the emergency has receded, but states still have to come up with the dollars to fill those in.
Critics argue the program's short-term gains in literacy and social and emotional development fade by first grade and say early childhood education should be handled at the state or local level. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
You're listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf. We interview creative minds and share their ideas. Here's your host, Annette Tour.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Bookshelf. Today, I'm honored to speak with Dr. Keith Black, one of the world's leading neurosurgeons and a pioneer in brain tumor research. Dr. Black is chairman of neurosurgery and director of the Maxine Dennett's Neurosurgical Institute at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. His groundbreaking work has earned him national recognition, including features in Time Magazine's Heroes of Medicine and Esquire's Genius issue as one of the 21 most important people of the 21st century. Today, we will be discussing his inspiring book, Brain Surgeon. Dr. Black, thank you so much for being here.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, you're welcome. You've been interested in science from a really young age, even dissecting bugs and frogs as a kid. What was it about the brain that drew you in?
So when I was accepted into medical school, I was actually accepted into an accelerated program where they admitted students from high school into both undergrad and medical school at the University of Michigan. So the first year of that program, we had a course in neuroanatomy, you know, the structure of the human brain. And to me, it was one of the most beautiful structures that I'd ever seen. I fell in love with the beauty of the anatomy, the complexity. The elegance of it was just inspiring. After that, you know, I started learning more about the physiology of the brain and the chemistry and realizing, you know, that this combination of anatomy, physiology, chemistry created the very essence of what makes us human. Right. I mean, it gives us our awareness, our consciousness, our ability for language, our ability for vision, our ability for movement. and 3.5 pounds of matter. So it was inspiring. And I could not think of anything better to spend the rest of my life trying to learn about it.
That's fascinating. There's a story you tell in your book that I really loved about the time you accidentally blew up the kitchen with your chemistry and your parents weren't even upset. That kind of response is rare. It's not that I love that you blew up your kitchen, but I loved your response. How much of an impact do you think their support had on your path, especially so early on?
Well, you know, my mother was a teacher. My father was an educator. He was principal of an elementary school. And, you know, they both, I think, were master educators. What they did most for me was really to understand what I was interested in learning. And I describe them as the ultimate educators. So, you know, that scene in that episode or story that I tell in the book where, you know, I was basically playing with my chemistry set, you know, trying to learn about chemical reactions and accidentally blew up the kitchen, could have been a scenario where, you know, my desire to actually learn more of chemistry was squashed. But in their minds, I mean, look, you know, they were not happy about the kitchen being blown up. But they understood that it was doing it an active learning, where I was basically exploring, trying to understand, you know, the basic elements of life and materials and matter. And so, you know, that was okay, right? I mean, if you make a mistake during a process where you're trying to learn and create and understand your environment better, you know, that was a forgivable sin. And that was what was so wonderful about them. I mean, they were ultimately, I think, the best parents, the best educators, the best gift, you know, that I could have ever been given.
Yeah, it sounds like they truly understood education, and you're lucky to have educators as parents. Kids are fortunate when they have good role models. So that was a very inspiring story.
Yeah, and not only you know, that story, but I also tell a story in the book where my father saw that I had an interest in the heart of a chicken that my mother was basically cleaning. And I took the little heart out, you know, after she, you know, finished preparing the chicken and was dissecting it. The next week, you know, he went to the slaughterhouse and brought home a cow heart. So I could clearly see, you know, the heart valves and the anatomy. He just cultivated a passion and a desire, whatever that was within you, to learning about.
You really nurtured the environment that you were interested in. That's amazing. Yeah. You've been in some extremely intense surgeries, life or death situation. How do you stay calm and focused when the stakes are so high?
Preparation, training, and more preparation and more training. You know, it's very similar to an airline pilot. On a nice clear day where there's no turbulence, you know, it's fairly straightforward flying a plane. But if you have a problem, you know, with your navigation system or your steering system or something, or engine goes out and it's bad weather and it's a storm, that's when that preparation really comes in critical, right? And it's the same with brain surgery, right? So what you want to do is to prepare for every scenario where the surgery can go wrong. And so when you encounter that scenario, you've already prepared for that, and you already know exactly what to do, and you can get the patient through safely. When I'm in surgery, it's almost like a meditative state. So I'm actually viewing the moves that I make during the surgery, 3 or 4 steps before I actually do that move. Before I do the surgery, I basically run through my mind every scenario that can go wrong with the surgery. What could happen? What would I do in that scenario? So you're prepared, so there's no reason to panic. You've already thought every scenario, hopefully, that you can think about through, so that you can get your patient through the surgery safely.
One thing I loved in the book is how connected you are to your patients. It's not just about the surgery. How has that emotional part shaped your work or stayed with you over the years?
One of the most important characteristics, I think, of a good surgeon, of a good brain surgeon, is really treating every patient like they would treat their mother or their sister or a parent. You can be technically fantastic, and you can do some amazing technical things, and the MRI scan may look perfect, but if the patient ends up with weakness or visual loss or language difficulty, that's not a success. So you have to delicately weigh the risk versus the benefit in every case that you do, whether the patient is better off with surgery or some other type of treatment, the right type of surgery, making sure that you do not overstep the envelope of risk so that you treat that person like you would treat someone that's close to you and in your family to get them through that case safely. So there are a lot of surgeons that I've seen that are technically very good that I would not necessarily want a family member to go to because, you know, they don't treat that individual. They're not making decisions like they would for a mother. And so that connection, I think, is absolutely critical, right? So if someone trusts you with their life, then you want to treat them like a family member, right? Despite your technical ability. And if you take that point of view, I think your outcomes would be better. I think your patients would do better.
That sounds something I wish every medical doctor and surgeon thought like you. In your book, you write about the chairman asking, what makes you think you'd be a neurosurgeon? How did you feel in that moment? And how did you maintain your confidence despite the subtle discrimination?
So one of the challenges that one has, right, if one is an individual of color or a female or, you know, someone that's not mainstream in a particular profession, and a comment is made, you don't know if that's a microaggression, if that's just that person the way they are, or, you know, they're actually racist against you, right? Maybe it was the way he was, but it turns out that he wasn't racist. He didn't like individuals of color. He didn't like women in neurosurgery. And so as a medical student wanting to enter into a very difficult field to enter, it's very competitive, one could really take that as a defeat, right? You can say, wow, you know, I'm not wanted here. I'm not accepted here. I could never make it here. What I try to instill in the students that I speak to, just expect, you know, there to be barriers, just to expect that there to be obstacles in the path of what you want to do. Rather than using that as a failure, turn those obstacles into more motivation for yourself to make yourself even better, even stronger. It's what I describe as the art of Tai Chi, right? So, you know, most of the time we're going to be facing forces that are much more powerful than we are, right? We're going to be the weak force. But in Tai Chi, you take that energy that's against you and turn it back on itself. So those comments didn't discourage me. It made me study harder, right? I worked harder. I mastered, you know, what I needed to master more. It made me better at what I needed to do.
That sounds very inspirational and very powerful resilience. I love that. Can you give an example in brain research or treatment today that gets you really excited or hopeful?
Well, I think the ultimate objective, right, of neuroscience is to understand ourselves. We are our brains. What is consciousness, right? What makes us us? And understanding how 100 billion brain cells with 100 trillion connections interact to give us that consciousness is, I think, one of the most fascinating things that we can study. We're just barely in kindergarten, right, and trying to understand that. But we're learning more and more. We're learning more about, you know, neural networks. We can study human brains. And we're doing that at Cedars-Sinai in our neurosurgery department with patients that are undergoing depth electrode implants for epilepsy monitoring or controlling movement disorders and how the brain recognizes images and form memories and make executive decisions. That, I think, is truly, you know, I think one of the wonders of the universe. The other thing that's really happening, that's really changing the field, is artificial intelligence. We can take huge amounts of information, understand it better, and learn how to treat disorders much better. So I think hopefully in my lifetime, we will have successful treatments for brain cancer. We will have successful treatments for Alzheimer's, stroke. I've been able to regenerate the human brain. I'm extremely optimistic, and I think it's a very exciting time to be in.
That ties into my next question that I was going to ask you about the excitement of artificial intelligence in medicine. So from where you stand, how do you see AI changing the future of neurosurgery?
I think AI is going to be very disruptive. If you think about neurosurgery, it's a very young field, right? It's less than 100 years old. But in the last few years, with the introduction of AI, AI will tell us exactly the right decision, exactly the right treatment for exactly the right patient. It's going to be able to do that, I think, better than physicians or surgeons. So you're going to know exactly the right operation to use, exactly when. We're going to know exactly how much tissue to remove. Once we take that tissue and analyze it, we're going to know exactly what to treat it with. And the acceleration of that information is going to be faster than we've ever imagined. So where it used to take 10 years to make an advance, it's now going to take 2 or 3 months. And that's going to be very disruptive
in terms of our ability to more effectively and more precisely, you know, treat the right patients with the right treatments. And more importantly, the acceleration of discoveries into new drugs and new treatments is going to be faster than we've ever seen any time in history.
That sounds very exciting, especially from where you are, because you understand it more. What do you think about Neuralink and the idea of using technology to modify or enhance the brain?
So I think it's an exciting area because Neuralink is a company that Elon Musk owns and started. It gets much more attention than a lot of the other types of technology like that that's available. So Neuralink is one of many technologies that are basically linking the human brain with machines and computers and devices. We've been doing this for, you know, more than 2 decades.
There are a lot of advances that have been made. Our ability to do it in a much more complex fashion is becoming bigger. What Neuralink does is that it basically takes the robot so that you can put the electrodes in a little bit more precisely. But the big advances are going to come, I think, when we're no longer going to be using electrodes to link with the brain, but you can use external fields, electrical fields, magnetic fields, to integrate in a way that doesn't require us to drill holes in the skull and implant electrodes. That would be a huge inflection point, and I think it would essentially be a game changer. Right, in the way that the human mind can integrate with devices that can make us better and restore function in a way that we can only begin to sort of dream about and think about now.
Very exciting field. Kind of reminds me, I was searching the internet and I saw an interview of you talking about Star Trek and an episode a long time ago where the Dr. Bones travels back to Earth and he's witnessing a brain surgery and he's like, what are you doing? You're cutting them open. This is so barbaric. Is that what inspired you to go into neurosurgery? Was it before or after that you saw this clip?
No, I think I think that episode came out after I had already decided I wanted to be in neurosurgery. But the little device that Bones had was a tricorder. And it's the way that I think neurosurgery should be. Right? So we shouldn't have to drill holes in the skull to treat, you know, disorders of the human brain. And developing external devices that can put magnetic fields into waves and other types of energy to restore brain function, I think it's going to be the way that we do it in the future.
I'm looking forward to that. You mentioned staying calm even in chaos. Is that something you had to learn, or did it come naturally to you?
I think it comes more naturally to me. I tend not to get excited about things. You know, some people are more excitable. I tend to be more matter of fact. And that's probably a good trait to have in neurosurgery, right? You don't want to have a lot of ups and downs, and you want to be like that captain of a boat, just keep a rudder steady and just, you know, hold the course in the storm. It served me well, and just stand calm when there's chaos all around you.
It sounds like an amazing skill to have. So I have a last question for you. Mm-hmm. With all the advances we've made in neuroscience, how much of the brain do you think still remains a mystery? I know you were mentioning we're in kindergarten right now, but what would you say about that?
I think the most exciting components of it remain a mystery. So I think we deceive ourselves if we believe we know a lot about the brain currently. We know a lot about the anatomy. We know a lot about the chemistry. We know a lot about how nerve cells communicate with each other through electrical impulses. What we don't know is how that anatomy, that physiology, that chemistry, those electrical impulses in particular areas of the brain translates to what you are experiencing now when you're looking at your computer and we're having this conversation. How does that take place? What is that? It has to be more than just electrical pulses, right? So we know basically what is happening. We know there's a car, but we don't understand much about the driver, you know, that's behind the wheel.
So fascinating and interesting. I probably could ask you so many more questions, but I want to thank you so much for being on East County Magazine's Bookshelf and for sharing your inspiring and incredible life with us. And you really make the world a better place. I want to mention again the book, Brain Surgeon, with Dr. Keith Black. Thank you so much, Dr. Keith Black.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. The merry month of May brings many special events. Food, wine, and beer lovers can savor a taste of Ramona, as well as the Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival. El Cajon's Music on Main Outdoor Concert Series returns, along with the America on Main Street Festival. There are also Mother's Day teas in Julian, tacos and beer in Ramona with a Mother of the Year contest, Paws in the Park in Lemon Grove for animal lovers, and a mariachi concert at Saquon. And here are details on these events. The Music on Main Outdoor Concert Series is held each Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. You can get a lineup of the bands playing in May and all summer long at downtownelcajon.com. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts will serve special Mother's Day tea services May 8th through 12th, complete with sandwiches and savories, scones and tea breads with lemon curd, jam, and whipped cream plus dessert. Vegetarian or gluten-free options are available with advance request. There are several seating times each day. For reservations, visit juliantea.com. Just days after Cinco de Mayo, you can celebrate Mexican culture at a Mariachi del Sol Mexico concert at Saquon. The renowned group will perform on Saturday, May 10th at 8 p.m. in Saquon's Heritage Events Center. For tickets and more details, you can visit saquon.com.
The Ramona Chamber of Commerce presents Tacos and Beer at the Ramona Outdoor Center on May 10th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. Multiple Latino bands will perform. You're invited to come celebrate Mom, including a Mother of the Year contest, a dance contest, food and craft vendors, opportunity drawings, and a kids' zone. For more information, you can visit RamonaChamber.com. Lions, Tigers, and Bears invite you to its Wild in the Country fundraising event on Saturday, May 17th from 2 to 6 p.m. All proceeds benefit care of the 65 exotic rescued wild animals at the sanctuary nestled amid the rolling hills of Alpine. This year's event will be hosted by Emmy Award-winning journalist Maria Arceta Dunn. Guests will also enjoy live and silent auctions, live entertainment, craft cocktails, and gourmet food. Guests can also participate in guided visits to the animals' habitats and hear stories of survival and second chances. Advanced tickets are required, and you can get those and more information at lionstigersandbears.org. America on Main Street is also known as El Cajon's largest block party. This event will be hosted in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, May 17th from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. America on Main Street is a celebration of the American spirit through appreciation and respect of the many diverse ethnic and historical groups in the community. Highlights include multiple stages of live entertainment, American and ethnic food booths, rides, arts, crafts, and display booths, a petting zoo, bounce houses, and more. The event is held every year in downtown El Cajon on East Main and Rea Avenue between Magnolia and Claydell. For more information, you can visit the city's webpage at elcajon.gov. A Taste of Ramona event will be held May 17th from 11 to 5 p.m. The event, hosted by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce, will feature tastes of local foods, wines, beers, and cider. Proceeds benefit education grants and school programs in Ramona. For tickets, visit RamonaChamber.com. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival returns May 24th. This annual event features a beer garden featuring craft brews, wine, and spirits, kids zones with carnival rides and games, live music and entertainment, plus more than 200 vendors showcasing local artisans and businesses. The event takes place from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the intersection of Town Center Parkway and Riverview Parkway in Santee. Hosted by Santee Chamber of Commerce and the City of Santee, the event is for ages 21 and up, and it's dog-friendly. For more information, visit SanteeStreetFair.com. And finally, the City of Lemon Grove invites you to Paws in the Park on May 31st from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at Traganza Heritage Park. You can meet the famous city kitty, adopt a pet, and, for Lemon Grove residents, get your pet vaccinated and microchipped. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.